brothers Stephen and James Powell refer to their business as providing the future space infrastructure. Dawn Aerospace helps customers who want to get into orbit and space, whether for surveillance of crops or emissions, to check the potential for asteroid mining, or to provide satellite services for the likes of mobile phones. The two services Dawn Aerospace provides include satellite propulsion. This is a system that includes thrusters, fuel tanks and control systems. But it also has its own rocket-powered space plane called the Aurora Mark II. Last year, the company successfully launched and landed the prototype version of the plane near Aoraki, Mount Cook. They founded the company in 2017. Alongside three other engineers, and the company's mostly based out of Christchurch with some staff in the Netherlands and the United States. The pair are up for a New Zealander of the Year award in the innovation category. Stephen's chief executive at Dawn Aerospace, James is chief financial officer and chief engineer. Welcome both. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. What was the start of this? It's quite the mission you've set yourselves. Just explain how you set up the company and the goals with which you set it up.
Yeah, so it all kind of started because we were working in the space industry. You know, we'd built high-powered rockets and broke some world records and done some cool things. And we had this team together that all realized, like, wow, there is this huge opportunity of space out there to make life on Earth better. But there was kind of also this tension because we realized that the underlying infrastructure, you know, the space transportation to go from Earth to space and from space to everywhere else, just wouldn't support scaling the industry to a relevant size for the world. You know, space launch is only about an $8 billion industry a year right now. Well, you know, like even the dairy industry of New Zealand, the dairy export industry is more than twice that size. So it's not a huge industry yet, but it has this potential to be massive. It has potential to be a $1 trillion industry. But to do that, we need to scale it up massively. And if we were to scale existing space infrastructure, it's just not very sustainable and not scalable to do that. So we actually need to change the fundamental technology that's used if we want to scale space to be really relevant for Earth-based industries. It has this massive potential to supercharge all of the Earth-based industries. So yeah, Dawn was founded on the principle of let's get this technology to be scalable and sustainable so that we can do much more from space.
And what would that take?
Yeah, so like you very quickly get into the real nuts and bolts of how do these rockets actually work and why is it so hard right now? On the in-space side, the fuels that they use are incredibly toxic, so we need to change that straight up. You know, we need to use fuels that are commonly available, that are non-toxic, that you could launch thousands of satellites with and not have any issues. So that was the first major problem that we've solved, and we're selling these propulsion systems that use non-toxic propellants in them. And the other side is James can talk about. It's really about bringing the performance of a rocket into something that is as usable as an aircraft.
James, you want to be able to recycle, basically, or you want them to be able to come back and be reusable, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. You know, before Dawn, I worked a lot in the aircraft industry, and, you know, we would build a rescue helicopter and do 10 missions in a day. You know, as a rocket manufacturer, unless you're SpaceX, you know, doing 10 missions in a year is an amazing achievement. And so we really wanted to bring that operational scalability where operating multiple times per day is not a big deal anymore. And there's some really important infrastructure, regulatory and technology necessities in order to be able to achieve that sort of scale. But yeah, Dawn really is, let's take the performance of a rocket and put it in a platform which has the operational scalability of an aircraft.
Straight away, what you come up against surely is the forces that are required to propel out this far, right? And that obviously impacts on not only the propulsion force you need, but the forces that come to bear on the craft itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
surprisingly, though, it's not really that the technology can't do it. Oh, we don't have rockets that are efficient enough, or we can't make vehicles light enough, or the thermal protection systems needed to survive, re-entry from suborbital flight are too challenging. Actually, none of these technical challenges are really problematic. They've all been proven to work just fine in other domains. The thing that hasn't ever been done before is bringing these together into a vehicle that is actually certifiable as an aircraft, that is operable as an aircraft. It's things like doing it with non-cryogenic propellants so that you don't have all the propellants just boiling off on the pad if you get delayed by 30 minutes, which, is a pretty common thing. Aircraft sometimes get delayed. It's doing it in a way in which you can fly the plane with other planes flying around, that you don't need exclusive airspace. Right now, for every rocket launch, they get all the boats out of the way, they get all the planes out of the way, and they have this exclusive environment for the rocket. That's not scalable. You can't do that if you want to fly tens of thousands of times a year from, close to populated cities.
So is the main issue cost and regulation?
Well, these things are definitely factors. So I mean, those things are certainly a challenge, but they're an important and necessary thing to work through, and nothing big or significant in its influence is going to be easy. So, yeah, that's sort of par for the course.
So where are you at currently with the Aurora Mark II?
Yeah, so the Aurora Mark II is a technology demonstrator for how we want to show that you can get to suborbital space multiple times a day. So it'll be the first vehicle to ever fly above the Kármán line, the sort of commonly accepted barrier to, border to space of 100 kilometers. The first vehicle to be able to do that twice in a day will be, the herald in the age of reusable space. But it's a very small vehicle. It doesn't go to orbit. It just goes up to that high altitude and comes back down. But already, this will be the highest performance aircraft ever built. There are tons of applications for this that we're exploring right now, of how this vehicle, even though it's a technology demonstrator, can really impact how life on Earth now.
Such as.
Such as testing all kinds of satellite equipment. Before you put it on a satellite, and say you've got a new camera, a new sensor, you might want to test that. There's microgravity experiments that growing proteins in microgravity can be very impactful for drug research, cancer research, that sort of thing.
Bunch of atmospheric research, which, like we launch weather balloons all around the world every day to help us understand weather and climate, and is it going to be a hot summer or a dry summer or a wet winter or whatever? And in New Zealand specifically, understanding weather is really, really important for our agriculture sector. And there's presently a whole lot of the atmosphere that we can't actually access and can't measure well, so have limited ability. And that limits our ability to forecast these things. And this sort of vehicle gives you access to vastly better data in that regard.
Because the balloons only go to 40 kilometers altitude, but satellites only go down to 250. And this whole section there, which is the stratosphere, the mesosphere, and a bunch of the thermosphere, really affects weather down low. It affects our climate models. That whole section is actually often termed the ignorosphere because we know so little about it. The Mark II Aurora would be able to access that frequently and at low cost, and would completely change our understanding, improve our weather models.
Tell us about that first flight then. That must have been quite the day.
I was right next to the pilot. I was the flight director for that flight, and right next to the pilot. And it was definitely a tense time. But when you do any flight testing, and I did this before dawn, when you do any flight testing, you rehearse and plan really thoroughly. And that includes rehearsing and planning for all the anomalies and edge cases and things that could go wrong, so that you get really used to them and you get really practiced with them. So then, once we're actually in flight, it all feels routine and it all feels known and understood. And even when things aren't quite going to plan, and you obviously do your very best to keep them according to plan, it feels routine, practiced, and understood. And so in the moment, it's actually fine and easy enough to work through. But interestingly, about a year later, I went back and listened to all the voice recordings and so on, and that was vastly more stressful. But then I wasn't rehearsed and practiced and ready and in the zone, so that was much harder. But at the time, actually, not too bad.
The amazing bit for me was seeing the vehicle actually taxi back down the runway and the realization that, like, wow, this thing, it actually worked. It flew, it went high, it went fast, and it came back, and we can do it again tomorrow. That's an amazing feeling.
What speed does it reach?
Yeah, this year we'll be pushing through to supersonic speeds and about 70,000 feet altitudes. That's like getting close to twice as high as what a commercial aircraft gets to. Sort of by Q1 of next year, we'll be flying up to 100 kilometers altitude and Mach 3.5, so 3.5 times the speed of sound.
Mark 3 with your hair on fire. Name the movie.
Yep, it's going to be steaming.
Okay. What about the money? Because a lot is going into on the investment side in this, right? As we said, you've got two strands to the business. So, how are you funding all this? Are there already lucrative contracts in place on the satellite side of things, or what?
Yeah, so I mean, when we set out to start the company, one thing we recognized right away was that most space startups raise hundreds of millions of dollars, some even billions, and they spend that money before they even have a product in market. And that's a really tough model because you're asking investors to keep backing you before you've got an income stream and before you've proven yourself in the market. And so we viewed that as a really risky, difficult model. And so we very consciously took an alternative model where we want to have a structure where we get products to market very, very quickly. So we had our first products in space. We had our first contracts basically when we started the company. And then we had our first products in space only a couple of years later. And we were able to start building profitable products, within a year after that. And so the company, from very early in its life and for many years now, has had profitable product lines. And what this means is that the cash coming into the business, from sales is very significant, and it's not just from venture capital, which is the more common space model. And this meant that, through COVID, we were able to get through that without cutting any staff. We actually kept growing through COVID because we were able to maintain and continue this cash flow stream before we did our Series A round, which was in 18 months ago now. We'd actually had more money come into the company from sales and research grants than from VC. Then when we did the Series A round, that was a decent amount of money. So, then it was back to being more money had come in from VC, but we're actually getting back to the point now where it's pretty close to having been more sales than VC again.
And we should be profitable in this quarter of the year, which I don't think many space companies can say at all.
Very good. Keep in touch. Thank you. That is Stephen and James Powell, brothers who founded Dawn Aerospace.